The Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke are collectively called the Synoptic Gospels because they overlap so much. They can frequently be viewed together as if they show different angles of the same stories. Now, this list excludes John's Gospel because John is often over there doing his own thing. But this story, the account of Jesus preaching in the synagogue at Nazareth, is one of the stories that appears in all three of the Synoptic Gospels. In the first two, in Matthew and Mark, the story is compressed. We do not hear what Jesus says in the synagogue. In both of those Gospels, the people are, as in Luke, first amazed at his wisdom and at the miracles he has performed, but then they recognize him. The people become upset when they realize that Jesus is one of them. Their amazement turns to fury when they realize that someone they watched grow up, whose parents and siblings still live in town, is now trying to teach them. It is as if they are thinking that Jesus left and has not been gone that long, but now he thinks he's better than us. It might help us get in their minds if we remember that Nazareth was a small town. Nazareth was not a center of trade or education. Nazareth was the kind of place that gets dismissed. In fact, in John's Gospel, one of Jesus' disciples, Nathanael, asks, "Can anything good come from Nazareth?" The years of people like Nathanael asking this question have worn down the Nazareans, so that even they are convinced that nothing good can come from them. In Matthew and Mark's gospel, this self-loathing is the source of their fury that Jesus would dare come back and try to teach them that they could be better. In this respect, I sometimes feel that Nazareth is not too different than Hampshire County or West Virginia. I am nowhere close to being a local. I have not yet been here 2 years, and I have spoken to people who moved to this county 50 years ago who have said that is almost long enough for people to forget they're not from here. And I wonder if those people still get asked the same questions that I do. No one from my life in Virginia or D.C. has ever questioned my decision to come here. It is Hampshire locals who seem confused. Every step of registering my car was met with people asking why I came here. When I told them that I came to serve this church as the pastor, they seemed to think that I was assigned here, sent by some bishop or committee to serve a term here against my will before I could then go someplace better. I'm here voluntarily. You all know that, I hope. I could have said no. I wanted to come. Jesus, too, chose to begin the preaching phase of his ministry in Nazareth. And perhaps this was the same human impulse that leads many future preachers to begin in their home churches. Or perhaps this was part of a greater divine plan, because Jesus' very existence is a refutation to the premise of Nathanael's question. Jesus' existence declares, yes, good things come from Nazareth. Good things can come from anywhere. And Jesus' return to Nazareth to preach in the synagogue was his effort to extend an invitation to the people of Nazareth to join him. But in Matthew and Mark's Gospels, they cannot see past their own low self-esteem. Luke's Gospel, though, is a little different. Luke's Gospel is like the extended edition for this story. Matthew and Mark just skip over what it was that Jesus said in the synagogue. He walks in, the people are impressed, the people are mad, he leaves. Luke takes us inside. tells us that Jesus was handed the scroll of Isaiah and read, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has appointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Last week, I set those words as a challenge, a mission statement for us, the church, but also for our elders serving on session. These words are a challenge to the church in more than one way. They can be read, as I did last week, as a charge, a task assigned to the church to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim the release of the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. These words are also challenging to hear and put in practice, and the response of the church writ large and of many within the church has often been closer to the people of Nazareth than it is to those of Christ's disciples. Consider the tasks offered. They seem to start simple enough. Bring good news to the poor. This is sufficiently vague. It could just mean saying the weather's going to be nicer tomorrow. We can make it mean just about anything. But remember what we read in the hunger quiz just a few minutes ago. It makes me think about Archbishop Camara, who was a Brazilian archbishop, who said, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why they are poor, they call me a communist." So let's turn next to proclaiming the release of the captive. How do we think we are doing about that? In our country, we have the highest reported incarceration rate in the world. Do we do something about that, or do we hide behind assertions that other places might be higher on the list if we had better data? Let's keep moving. Recovery of sight to the blind. Well, that's just not in our control. We try, we train surgeons, and we do our best with our students here at the state school in Romney, but an actual restoration of sight, this list is starting to seem unfair. Let the oppressed go free. If we should ever achieve the first two items on this list, that will do some ways toward covering the fourth item, but just what does this mean? Who are the oppressed? Does this mean we have to be nice to outsiders? The last item is proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. This is a reference to an old Israelite practice, sometimes called the year of Jubilee. Every 49 years, which is 7 times 7, it is a repetition and magnification of the Sabbath. God said Israel should celebrate a jubilee, a massive celebration that allows a year for the land to rest, the release of all captives and prisoners and slaves, the cancellation of all debts, and the return of any land sold to pay a debt back to its original owners. Can you imagine anything more destructive to our modern economy than erasing all debts? How would the banks survive? What strikes me, though, about Luke's gospel is that the people at first do seem receptive to this. Unlike in Matthew or Mark, Jesus has to say a little more. It doesn't seem like the people are rejecting Jesus out of an internalized self-loathing. No, Jesus continues speaking, and his responses suggest that the people of Nazareth are on board if only Jesus stays and does this for them first. The people of Nazareth are demanding that Jesus put Nazareth first. Jesus' answers to their questions recorded in the text suggest that they're all for Jesus if only he helps them. And Jesus responds by telling two additional stories from Scripture, from 1 and 2 Kings. The first is a story about the prophet Elijah, perhaps the second most significant prophet in Judaism after Moses and in Christianity, the only person other than Christ himself to have ascended bodily into heaven. Jesus tells about a time where there was a severe famine over all the land, not just in Israel, but the whole region. And yes, there were many Israelites in need, but God sent Elijah to a widow at Zarephath in Sidon. Jesus names the town and the region to tell us and the people of Nazareth that this was not an Israelite. This was a Gentile widow. Next, Jesus tells them about the prophet Elisha, who trained under Elijah. In Elisha's time, there were many lepers, but the one Elisha cleansed was named Naaman, a Syrian. These two stories of God acting to help others before even helping the Israelites asserts that God's love is not something that we can contain. That God's love is not subject to our human prejudices. Jesus tells these two stories to refute the demand of Nazareth first. And in Luke's gospel, it is these words, not an internal self-loathing, not low self-esteem, that result in the Nazarene's rage and attempt to throw him from a cliff. I see this in us as well, not just in some people, not just in others, but also in myself. How desperately do we want to believe in God if only God will help us first? How willing are we to proclaim good news to the poor, release to the captive, and freedom to the oppressed, as long as we are the poor, we are the captive, and we are the oppressed? And then how fiercely do we all begin to resent the implication that those words might describe others more than or even just as much as they describe us? How often do we hear people saying that they deserve a benefit, but the other people getting it don't? This, friends, is the challenge of the gospel. The proclamation of good news, not to and for ourselves, but for others. The challenge of the gospel is to put aside our sinful human instinct to try to hold on to everything, to try to stockpile even God's grace against our future suffering, even as others are suffering now. But the promise of the gospel is that God will equip those who answer the call. The promise of the gospel is that if we try to meet the challenge, God will lift us to it. And so for that, thanks be to God.